You're listening to Dig Deep on 91.7 KEXE, 90.5 KBXE. We're also a podcast you can get through iTunes. I'm Heidi Holton, and joining me, Chuck Marone. He's our conservative commentator from Strong Towns, from the Brainerd area. Chuck, thanks for being here again.
Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
And Aaron, we describe you as a liberal blogger, teacher, host, many things. Our liberal commentator, Aaron Brown, from Balsam Township.
Good to be here, representing the fair rectangle of Balsam.
So the topic, I think, was posed by Chuck, and I think it's a very smart one right now. We'll be continuing this in three conversations. It has to do with immigration. And Aaron, you had an idea of how to kind of jump into this, because we like to start kind of with the history of a topic we might be doing, history specific to where we lived as well.
Mm-hmm.
So where should we start?
Well, I thought it would be kind of fun for each of us in our own way to describe part of our immigrant history. It's said in political discussion, but it's literally true, that unless you're a Native American,
a Native American or a descendant of a slave.
Right. You're an immigrant. You came from another place to America to settle or live, and became what we now call Americans, which, of course, before that, it was a continent that was doing its own thing. So all of us who aren't one of those two descriptions have an immigrant story in our family history somewhere. And for me, the one I wanted to mention, the one that brought me where I am anyway, is the Browns. My last name is Brown, and that's an English name. I'm not mostly English. I have a small amount of English heritage. They came from Cornwall, England, which is a mining region in southwest England. Poldark, if you've ever seen the show, is set there. I always think of my family being the grubby-looking people pounding rocks in the background of that show. And so they were expert miners, and so they came through Canada, through the Upper Peninsula of Michigan for a couple generations, and then when the mines kicked up here in northern Minnesota, they continued on. They dropped the letter E from the end of the name, Brown, when they came to America. Other than that, the name is the same, and they each, over many generations, married a different Scandinavian woman from different parts of Scandinavia or the Nordic nations. So I'm mostly a Scandinavian with an English name. And so that's how I got where I am.
That's fascinating. My Maroon side, I believe, is Prussian, although I grew up being told it was Russian, and started to look at maps and try to figure this out. And I'm like,
Sounds more German, yeah.
The family is German, that side, and identify as Prussian. And I'm like, it's got to be Prussian, as in the eastern part of Germany. But the side that I kind of have most identified with is the Nygaard side, the deep Norwegian. My grandmother passed away when I was a senior in high school, but we spent a lot of time together growing up. And she lived right by where I went to elementary school, so I would go have lunch with her on Fridays. And I was told later that she could speak fluent Norwegian. Like she could speak Norwegian. Certainly her mother spoke Norwegian and was the first generation immigrant. The thing I remember most about my grandmother was she just had all this Norwegian stuff in her house. She had things written in Norwegian, and she has a plate that my mom has now on her in her kitchen.
Did she have the Lord's Prayer in Norwegian?
Yes.
My grandma and grandpa had that too.
Yes. And she would make all the Norwegian, at Christmas time, make all the Norwegian cookies. And it's, in a way, sad, because I really would like to know more about that. But for her, she was American. She was not Norwegian. She had these things with her heritage that I think obviously meant something to her. And the idea of, sharing with little Chucky the rosettes and all this, like, that meant something to her. But she was American, and it was not I'm going to pass along to you these Illuminati secrets of the Norwegian Viking, whatever. It was like, you're an American kid. Let's have a pizza and some Twinkies and, enjoy some time together. Only when I got older and I said, I love my grandma. How do I remember her? And I started to bake at Christmas time. And I would get her old Norwegian recipes. And a lot of these things were written in things I couldn't read this stuff. There's some deep heritage that has been lost. Mm-hmm. Or you might say melting pot into the country, into the American psyche. Because I make krumkaka but I dip it in chocolate and do all kinds of things that are probably, from a true Norwegian sense, a bastardization of what that is, but it's been Americanized now for my kids.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And we don't need to get into this, but I have always been really impressed by your tradition of the baking of the cookies, and you bring them to neighbors and you post those on Facebook. And so, I mean, it sounds like you're continuing that on. It may not be exactly the Norwegian stuff, but you often don't hear people doing that in general, but especially men and doing that with their daughters. So I've always appreciated
There's
that.
I think the time of year when the heritage story would come out would be at Christmas time for both sides of the family. And both of my grandmothers were bakers. And the way that heritage manifested is, here's how I show you love. I'm going to make like the traditional cookies that my, you know, grandparents made for me. And so, yeah, it's an attempt to kind of keep that up. Although I feel like a lot of the Norwegian and some German aspects of it have been stuff that I have researched and learned. Not that on my grandma's knee, she said, well, let me tell you about, you know, there was none of that. And I feel like I missed something, you know, because of that.
And then what happens after a few generations is certain traditions get melded together. Like, I just think about, okay, Cornwall has the pasties, and we have a family pasty recipe. But we're also, the sauna tradition became so big in my family, and that came from the Swedish-Finnish in-laws, essentially. Right. But that got adopted into my brown family history as well. And so after a few generations, it gets really hard to pick out where the traditions even come from. They're just things that our family's always done.
Well, they also get modernized. Mm-hmm. So like we, last year, were doing some work on Brainerd History Week, and we were looking at South Brainerd. And I had an opportunity to talk to some, you know, old-timers who had been there for a long time. Because this was a Finnish neighborhood, the idea of a Finnish sauna came up. And I could see with the look on their face that they were a little scandalized by it. Yeah, that was the Finnish sauna. And they made it sound almost like brothel-esque. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't elaborate on it, but it was clear that that was a little bit taboo. And of course, today, like the YMCA has the sauna that we go, you know, it's very like mainstream and very like wholesome and whatever. It's fascinating because I do think America is this great land where we do tend to, and I'm nostalgizing a little bit, but take the best of many different things and over time kind of churn them and blend them together. And I do think that that's one of the inherent strengths of this country.
And forget the hard stuff.
And forget the hard stuff, right. You know, the Norwegians, I mean, this is the part of the Norwegian history I've researched and learned is that when my ancestors came here in the early 1900s and the Prussian-German side in that time period too, these were times of tremendous tumult in the lands they came from. I mean, they were in a sense, you know, we look at Syrian refugees today coming here or Haitian refugees or Nicaraguan refugees fleeing their homeland. In Norway, you had failed crops, you had famines, you had, you know, people starving to death. They set off to this unknown land that they hoped would be better, not because necessarily, you know, they had great hopes for what it would be or any promises, but the place they were at is like, how can it get any worse than this? You know, we're going to die if we stay here. And so I think that kind of thing also gets lost over time. And we like to nostalgize these people as, you know, these were adventurers out to seek their fortune. No, they were fleeing death. They were fleeing starvation. They were trying to survive. We gloss over the Native American story a little bit. I do think in the context of, you know, the time, part of this nostalgia also, I think, doesn't encapsulate the fact that, you know, when you're desperately poor or when you're starving or when you're in a lot of these other things that, like today, socially, we look at as being really important, don't matter. They cease to matter. I mean, the fact that you're dislocating people, the fact that you're, because I got to feed my family, I got to make sure I don't starve, it changes everything. So I think sometimes our look back at history, you can't help but cloud it with modern lenses. But I think an authentic look is a lot messier and more complex than maybe we like to think of it today.
Did we want to talk about immigrant history in northern Minnesota?
Yes.
Or did you want to?
My stories are very similar to yours. I was just going to do that very quickly. Norway and Finland. And I knew a lot more about the Finnish family. They were more talkers and kind of rowdy folks. But
now there's a stereotype.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I learned some Finnish from my grandmother, but it was swear words.
Uh-huh.
But my Norwegian, so Holten means is a village in Norway. And so my grandparents came to South Dakota and farmed. They both had the last name Holten. And they always told us that it was because they came from the same place. Not that they were related, but that's where Holten comes from. The Finnish side came, my great-grandfather came to the range and he did all the things that we hear the stories about. He met my great-grandmother in a boarding house. She was working there and he was a worker and he was sick and she brought him soup and they fell in love. So he worked in the mines. He was a forester in the also homesteaded land south of Grand Rapids in the Jacobson area. And they were all really hard workers. And the other side of the family were farmers and, mm-hmm. you know, lost the farm. That was usually the story and ended up all moving to the city because of what was going on in that way. But we did need to correct. I'm surprised you didn't do it.
I was almost jumped in because I've never, I've never been more offended by anything Chuck has said.
When I said sauna.
You said sauna instead of sauna.
I'm sorry.
This is the worst thing you've ever done.
Yes. We felt we needed to do that, but
you both are ganging up on
Look at us in our mild, mellow ways, like being so riveted to our core by this thing that Chuck said.
I know. We're still holding.
Because that was
at least we got it out.
We can't let it pass.
That's a tell that I'm not...
You're not finished.
I'm not finished, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The thing, you mentioned the Prussian or Russian, the thing we always found very interesting that we had some inkling that maybe the Finnish side of the family was actually from Russia and perhaps Jewish, because when they came here, they took the name Nordberg, which was definitely not Finnish.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there was certain things that were not talked about in that side of the family.
Okay,
and
that's
the Swedes
the
also
thing.
Ruled Finland for a time and then switched ownership with Russia in that period. And there's a lot of, you mentioned tumult, there was a lot of civil war in Finland. And
right. So
you had the Russian influence, Swedish influence, a lot of resentment going either way by the Finns. And so, yeah, a lot of things could have been going on there.
This is a fascinating part of this because you get the history from your family that they want you to have.
Right.
And I can even see this with my kids. Like I sanitize the messiness of my relationship with my parents and my grandparents and what have you and extended family. I sanitize that for my kids. I am guilty of that. I want them to look at everybody as, you know, great people who did great things and all the, you know, the episodes that you want to forget don't get passed down. There is a certain, you know, family lore. I mean, I grew up on the farm that was homesteaded by the original Prussian. I've heard like rumblings of stories that, you know, this was a crazy thing. Like these were not necessarily always upstanding people, but you don't get that part. That part disappears. Mm-hmm. And so we look back and we just see like greatness. And you even said, Heidi, they came over here and they worked hard.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Yeah. But I'm sure they were, you know, I'm sure there were some lazy bums in that group. And I'm sure
wild party people and lots of personal relationships that failed. And
they were
humans. They were people, and they were, especially early on, people separated from their culture, their language, and struggled with that in really profound ways. What I always like to point out when we talk about the history of this immigrant region, because taking the Iron Range, for example, I don't think it would have been much different in northern Minnesota broadly, but at 1910, I think, in the census there, our foreign-born population in the region was the same as New York City, which was, of course, at the time, I think 70 or 80% foreign-born. It was absolutely multitude of people from different parts of the world. We were much smaller, but it was the same here. And so one of the things you have to look at is why did they come and how did they end up here as opposed to somewhere else? And I always like to point out, like, people think, oh, my great-great-grandpa came here to work in the mines, and that's means something about your family's relationship to mining. Well, mining was one of the ways you could make money, and one of the ways you could make enough money to buy land. And making money and buying land, or making enough money to go back to Europe and buy land there, were the main motivations of these people at the time. The job was just a means of getting there. At different times in local history, waves of immigrants from different parts of Europe, from sometimes different parts of the world, but mostly Europe, would come in. And I always like to point out there were waves and that each wave had something in common. They may have been from different parts of Europe. You know, early on, it was a lot of German, a lot of British, you know, because the mines wanted those Cornish miners who were trained, and they wanted Germans because there was a historical tie between Germany and England, and they wanted that stock of people, and there were religious compatibilities and things like that. And then they had to bring in the Scandinavians, and they were okay. And that first wave of immigration then became skeptical about immigration. They weren't sure about these Southern Europeans, these Italians, maybe even these Eastern European groups, or the Finns, which were culturally different.
I grew up with Polish jokes.
Yeah.
Like, I always assumed that Polish, like, people were weird, strange people because I grew up with just Polish jokes.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But that's a cultural outcropping of that distrust or disinclination to meld with these other groups. Well, those groups came for the same reasons, but were perceived then as the outsider immigrants and faced some of the same backlash that we might recognize today that is used against immigrants. But as these groups came in, each time they would become Americanized or become part of the group. You know, the classic example is the strike of 1907 on the range was led by Finnish immigrants, and they rounded up a lot of other people to join them in the strike. And that strike was broken not because of the lack of effort by those early Finns, but because so many Eastern Europeans came and took the jobs from the strikers that the strike was simply smothered out. And those were Eastern Europeans. Well, in 1916, the next big strike, it was those workers, the Eastern Europeans,
yeah,
who realized the same things the Finns did and the Scandinavians did less than 10 years earlier. And then with their new language knowledge and their ability to talk to each other a little bit, then came out and formed the same opinion and had a strike as well. And that tradition, I think, is kind of sets the table for how immigration continued through our history and really became this controversial thing, not just now, but throughout our American history.
That, to me, is the like historic takeaway, is that whether we're talking about Rome being overrun with Gauls, or whether we're talking about northern Minnesota being, you know, overrun with wave after wave after wave of northern European settlement, there's always tension at the beginning. And there's always a period of time of working that out. And it's messy and it's painful. And then there's always some type of coherence into your own unique group and identity that is, you know, mm-hmm, for us, northern Minnesota. And then you have the next wave.
Mm-hmm.
And it essentially starts all over. I'm not excusing that or saying like that's an optimum, but I think if you look historically at humanity, that has been the case everywhere.
We will move into present day on immigration in our next segment of Dig Deep.
Do I want you? Oh my, do I, honey? Did I do? Oh my, do I, honey?